king is dead. His successor, the Kaiser, will realize in his later years that Germany desperately needs to join in Europe's rapidly growing industrialization. In Frankfurt, a young man presents to the members of the Physics Association a device to reproduce sounds at any distance with the help of a galvanic current. The young man is Johann Philipp Reis. He calls his device telephone. In the United States, a new president takes his oath of office. His legacy will include abolishing slavery. The year is 1861.
Im geschäftlichen Verkehr ließ ich mich immer von dem Gedanken leiten.
In my business dealings, my guiding principle was always that if both parties to a contract did not find their interest reflected in it, then both would lose, one money and the other trust. I have always acted according to the principle that I would rather lose money than trust. The integrity of my promises, the belief in the value of my products and in my word of honor have always had a higher priority for me than a passing profit.
I would rather lose money than trust. Robert Bosch, pioneering and pragmatic, humanist and humanitarian. Book One, From the Life of a Global Citizen.
This is a time of large families with a great many children, and life takes place mainly in villages and small towns. Most people have never heard the sound of an engine. The automobile has not yet been invented, nor have roller skates or popcorn machines. Socks are knitted by hand, and the yarn is spun at home.
The Pony Express is a brand new venture in America. Despite ending as a financial disaster, the enterprise is destined to grow into an American legend. During its heyday, somewhere along the 3,200 kilometers between St. Joseph, Missouri, and Sacramento, there's always a rider on his route. No older than 18, no heavier than 60 kilos. Every 15 to 20 kilometers, he saddles a fresh horse and gallops on through the wide open spaces, bringing 10 kilos of express mail. The most famous of these young riders is Buffalo Bill. It was during these automobile-free days that Robert Bosch was born, in a small town in southwestern Germany, and a life began that was to take an unusual course. Change and upheaval, triumphs and disasters, revolutions and new beginnings awaited him. He would make his way with a view of the world that was ahead of its time.
Robert was a bright, intelligent child. When young Robert was seven, his father sold the lucrative farm and the inn that went with it. He no longer saw a future for it, fearing that the construction of a new railway line would divert the travellers, who provided most of his business, from the roads. The family moved to nearby Ulm, a town of 25,000.
In Ulm, Robert attended a secondary technical school. This caused him no trouble, but didn't engage him enough to make him excel. After leaving school, he was drawn to zoology and botany. But the prospect of first having to study at high school, followed by quite a lengthy program at university, was daunting. His father, meanwhile, was urging him to do an apprenticeship as a precision engineer. The boy took his advice and was soon bored to tears.
Not only did my master seldom show his face in the workshop, but he did little to encourage learning. We apprentices were left to our own devices, and we were terrible idlers. I once had a large job ahead of me in which I was to file iron plates. My file was in very poor condition. I asked the master for a new one. He told me, "I've had this file for 12 years, and now suddenly you tell me it's no good."
Robert was exasperated because he knew he couldn't produce good results this way. To be successful and satisfied with his work, he needed a different approach. What that approach would be, he didn't yet know. In order to find out, he set out as a journeyman, working in a series of workshops after completing his apprenticeship.
Bosch's wanderings first took him to his brother Karl's company in Cologne. He didn't stay long, though, moving on in the same year to Stuttgart, where he joined C&E Fine, a pioneering company in electrical engineering. Shortly afterwards, he moved to Hanau, where he took up a post at a factory making chains of gold, silver and tombak, a brass alloy with a high copper content. The next year, Bosch spent doing his military service and was offered the prospect of a career as an officer.
But a soldier's life was certainly not for me.
Bosch was 21 when his year in the military ended, and he immediately set off on his travels again. In Nuremberg, he was employed by Sigmund Schuckert, a man who had lived and worked in America for some time and who had a very successful company manufacturing voltmeters and ammeters.
Electricity had just begun to find its way into ordinary people's lives. The first electrical exhibition was held in Munich. Visitors were enthralled by the wonders of modern technology. They heard of test runs of the world's first electric tram in Berlin and the first telephone network in Germany. They experienced electric lighting and timekeeping, gazed at batteries and dynamo electric machines, engines, wires and lightning rods. Astute observers realized they were witnessing the forerunners of an industry with a dazzling future.
Robert Bosch, too, soon saw the signs of the times. But fascinating though the progress of technology was, it did not gain his undivided attention. Working for Sigmund Schuckert, he became aware of another phenomenon that was to leave its mark on him.
At that time, workers were unused to order. There was little enthusiasm for introducing health insurance, for having the comings and goings in the factory yard closely monitored, or working hours checked. Rather than working on Mondays, many simply didn't bother to show up. I recall one man who hardly ever began working before Wednesday, but he could still get more done than the others.
Robert's keen observations quickly taught him the difference between slipshod and diligent work, between half and wholehearted application. He was almost as interested in his co-workers' thoughts, feelings and opinions as in the technical details of the electrical devices and machines he was helping to produce.
To better understand the laws of electricity, he needed more in-depth knowledge than he'd been able to accumulate during his years of schooling, apprenticeship and travel. So, during the winter semester of 1883 to 1884, he attended Stuttgart Polytechnic as a non-registered student.
I didn't have the necessary background knowledge for these studies, nor did I possess the necessary nous to bring my poor math skills even close to their potential. But what I learned was to shed my fear of technical terminology. After that, I knew about voltage and currents and what horsepower was.
After 6 months, he was confident that he had gained sufficient knowledge to explore the modern world for himself. He left the Polytechnic and resumed his travels. His sights were set on America. Like all Germans who set foot in the land of opportunity at that time, he encountered a working world that was different in every respect. Faster, more modern, more advanced, and more efficient than back in Germany, where industrialization was only just beginning to take shape, and where bureaucracy was infinitely slower, more cumbersome, and fraught with many more obstacles than in the United States.
In the New World, Bosch worked at Edison factories and became familiar with the production techniques for a whole range of modern electrical devices. Arc lamps, light fixtures, remote reading thermometers and phonographs. Nevertheless, Bosch realized that his dream of greatly broadening his knowledge in the United States was not coming true. All around him, life was more or less exclusively about earning money and looking after one's own interests.
It was a time of crisis, and I was unemployed for a while. But then I found a position at the Edison Machine Works. At that time, I also joined the Knights of Labour, a very popular workers' association, which, when they accepted me, promised a fraternal relationship. Once at a meeting, someone put forward the view that there was no point in the unemployed offering their services so that employers could hire them for lower wages and fire the higher-paid workers. I made the suggestion that all those who had jobs should contribute part of their wages so as not to force unemployed people to make such offers. But I got no support.
The 23-year-old didn't stick around in America for long. The chief reason for returning home was a young woman named Anna Kaiser. "No matter what happens," he wrote to her, "I must make you mine." And she accepted him. However, he couldn't marry Anna Kaiser just yet. His salary was too meagre and his future too uncertain. Still, their engagement by letter across the Atlantic Ocean was motivation enough for him to pack his bags and return to Europe. What he brought back from America was a stronger character and a blossoming credo that would guide him in later life. Whatever he did, he would do well. He was determined never to deliver shoddy work.
Subsequently, Bosch spent a short while in England and worked for 6 months outside London, making electrical equipment. He then returned to Germany and found a job in Magdeburg at a company making internal combustion engines, speedometers and electrical lighting. The products had a good reputation, but the working atmosphere in the company was bad. The boss liked to play the workers off against each other.
Robert Bosch was 25 years old, engaged to be married and had seen the world. He had no intention of continuing to work at such a place. Anyway, he felt it was time to end his travels and make a firm decision about the future. A decision that suited an independent man with his own ideas on ethics, diligence, quality, and fairness.